Welcome to Torah to the Nations, where we study the Hebrew roots of our faith, sponsored by Tree of Life Outlet at Lincoln City Factory Stores.
Shalom out there in Oregon. Shalom to all you Torah fans. And good morning, Don. How you doing?
Good morning. Boy, I'm just finishing up eating my morning gruel.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about shalom because we always tell what it means. And this morning we have a guy that's going to be in the studio with us. And he really studied the Paleo Hebrew. We had Jeff Benner in here, did a couple of interviews. But this gentleman, Eric is his name, Eric Bissell, has done a lot of work on the Paleo Hebrew. And talking about shalom, we've tried to explain that. We might just jump right in here and have Eric tell us what shalom would mean if we went into the Paleo Hebrew.
Well, we could do that. But, you know, I'm going into this whole diet thing this week.
Oh, you are?
We're trying to decide whether we should be fasting for a while, you know, because we've got the other Pesach coming up, which I know you don't really keep that one, I know, but whatever.
Whatever. I think it's a good idea to fast. So.
Yeah, but we're just thinking, you know, that would be a great time. In our 50 days, we'd do 40 of it or something, or at least between the time the Jewish calendar does Pentecost and maybe something like that.
Might be a good idea, Don. I don't know. See if any of these listeners want to call in at 503-316-1220 and tell Don what you think.
That's right. Tell me all about this whole dieting stuff. I mean, yeah. You know, really, who cares?
Yeah.
When you get down to it.
Good. I hit the scales at 240, and I figure I'm going to have to do that with you probably. So I'm going to I'm getting up there. But good morning, Eric. How are you doing? Good to have you in the studio with us this morning. It's kind of exciting having somebody live in the studio. A lot of times we do this, you know, we do like it from all over the world. We actually had some people from South Africa last week. They were on Skype with us, and we're going to do more of that Skype stuff. But, Eric, tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from and why you're even in here. How about let's start with who are you? And what do you do, Eric?
I'm a...
Right up on the mic there.
I'm a artisan builder, just make things, and been studying the scriptures for about 50 years.
Wow.
Under the Presbyterian tutelage, you might say, John Calvin, point of view, Westminster Confession of Faith, Baptist high school education, and probably around 2001, stumbled across a Torah study. And the one thing caught my attention, which I'd never heard before, which was the teacher said the word Torah technically could be interpreted as, if you render the spelling of the word in Hebrew, as in English letters, it would be T-O-R-A-H. But the T would be the letter Tav, which is the sign of the covenant. Vav Resh is what the pronunciation would be, Or, which is light, and Ah is to reveal or to express. So the Torah is the expression of the light of the covenant.
Wow.
And I had never really thought of words being spelled according to their technical meanings. You study English, and it has bits and pieces of various different languages from all around the world of different eras and a lot of Greek and Latin, and come to find out, a whole lot of Hebrew. For example, a couple of years ago, I went to End of the Trail Interpretive Center, Oregon Trail over here in Oregon City, and they had a sign up there that says, nobody really knows where the word Oregon comes from. It's not an Indian word. The pioneers didn't invent it. And it's just like, well, what's it doing here? And it's like, well, nobody really knows. It's up for guess. But if you look at Hebrew, the word or means light. Ori, with a yod at the end of the basic word, means my light, and the word gan means garden, as in Gan Eden would be Garden of Eden. So Oregon would be my light garden, or my garden of light.
And it's like, wow.
Boy, what a concept. I wonder if the word Oregon is originally Hebrew, like somebody who came here many years ago labeled it, and then the inhabitants said, sure is, especially in the springtime, like now. It's like, gosh, this is a beautiful place, you know?
You know, that's what they were saying. They were actually looking for a garden when they came across on the Oregon Trail. They were looking for something that would be really like what we have here. They were, you know, when they went across the path.
Well, so are you suggesting maybe Lewis and Clark labeled it, or did they find it was already labeled once they got here?
They had to pick that up from the locals who were already here.
Yeah, that's very really interesting.
Well, because if you think of all the other places Paleo-Hebrew has been found all around our nation, and then we find pieces of language that pre-existed someplace, that's a very good point.
Well, have you all discussed the Las Lunas stone with your listeners?
Well, you sure can do it again. Not everybody listens every day, so Las Lunas would be something that you might explain.
Well,
we talked about
it with Jeff Benner, but, you know, we've just have little brief snippets of, and there's the place over it. Is it in New Hampshire, I think? There's two or three, four other, Ohio?
Well, you know,
there's several places. Cherokee Stone.
Well, Stephen Collins, he's in South Dakota, and he wrote a number of books. One of them is called The Lost Ten Tribes of Israel Found, and then he elaborated on that writing a few other books. But he has documentation, photographs, and writing of many archaeological sites in the United States showing ancient Hebrew writing and artifacts from the time of Yeshua, before it was like
actually
300
Solomon,
to 500 right. B.C.
Yeah.
And I want to say, we actually have that series here for sale. It's usually $20 a piece if you order it.
$25 if you buy them individually, right. And it's $100, so it'll be $70 here.
You get four books for $70, and these are documentation about exactly what Eric's talking about, is how the Hebrew nation, really an empire, seeded itself all across the world, even in David's time.
Well, the point about that is it sounds rather far-fetched to believe that. But you have to look back and say, give a present modern-day context. Imagine somebody in the future, 1,000 years from now, studying the history of the United States. And all they study is Washington, D.C. And all they read about is what's going on at the Capitol, Washington, D.C. It's like, wait a minute, what about the rest of the country? What about the extent of the American influence in economics and politics and military involvement all across the face of the globe? And it's like, oh, we're just studying Washington, D.C. Well, when you read the scriptures and it's talking about the land of Israel in the days of Solomon, that's what that's like. Solomon's empire, according to Stephen Collins' research, actually reached around the world. For example, the word for iron in Hebrew is Bet Resh Zion Lamed, Brazil. And actually, in the nation of Brazil today, they extract more iron than just about anywhere else in the face of the earth. He said there was research to suggest that Solomon's ships were actually in Indochina. And here's one. A few years ago, I was just starting to learn Hebrew phonetically, and I was about to go to Hawaii. My niece was going to go to the YWAM college over there, Youth with a Mission. And so I was thinking, boy, I'm gonna go to Hawaii in a couple of days. The thought occurred to me, how would you spell phonetically the word Hawaii? Have you ever considered that?
No, I haven't.
No?
I'm going to start doing that, though.
Well, here's a challenge for it, then. Ha-u-a-e. Say there's four syllables.
Right.
Or but the Hawaiians say ha-va-e with the heavy pronunciation on the e, which would be but that's like three syllables. So it's maybe three, maybe four syllables. But the heavy emphasis is on the e. How do you suppose you might spell that? Do you know the letters in Hebrew enough to render a
hey, guess? Vav and e, huh? He's a vowel, so. Yeah, it would almost be a. It would almost have the name of Yahweh in it, wouldn't it?
Well, almost. Well, here, so you have hey would be ha.
Yeah.
And then if it's ha u a or ha va, the letter vav is pronounced as a v, a right. W, an o, or u. So it's hey, then a vav, and then another a sound could be another hey because an aleph is silent and ayin has kind of a g sound. So ah, ha, ha u a e. And the E sound is a yod. So if you read it in English from left to right, that's hey, vav, hey, yod. But hey, if you read it in Hebrew from right to left, it's yod, hey, vav, hey, yawah. Now, how do you think that got there? A rock out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, in the middle of the Sea of Peace, you might say, is the name of Yahweh. Now, do you think maybe one of Solomon's ships put it there?
Or it was an accident.
Well, maybe just an accident. The point is, if Solomon went around the world, he had ships that went out. His friend Hiram of the Lebanese city states of Tyre and Sidon built these huge ships, the size of aircraft carriers now, and they went around the world and they came back after 3 years. Well, it took Magellan 3 years to go around the world. And it's like you could circumnavigate the globe, having stopped at many ports in 3 years, and come on back. And it's like Solomon took the name of Yahweh. Remember, the Queen of Sheba came to, not just to question him about science. She said, about the name Yahweh. She came to question him and answer and say, what do you got to say about this? Solomon's mission, although he turned it, I mean, it wasn't military because David had done the conquering, but Solomon's was one of peace and science and art, and he kind of spun off. But the point was, he knew the name, he had answers regarding the name, and he spread the name across the face of the earth.
Mm. Wow, that's just incredible.
That is incredible. And that's now, so this brought you, you're Presbyterian, you're looking at the Word, you saw the Torah. Well, then how did you get to the depth of where you've gone? I mean, that chart that you've done, that you're teaching now, it seems to tell the whole story of the Word of God from what I've heard you say, that the letters, the earliest form of the letters really tell a picture and tell the story over and over again throughout patterns in the Word. Am I getting some of this? Is that
well,
the way,
Jamie? Before we go, there, let's talk about the patterns a little bit and the cycles and the things that we don't find in English, but you do find in Hebrew.
Well, let me back up just a bit. From my understanding, Frank Seekins, a guy out of Scottsdale, Arizona, presently, about 15 years ago, originally met a guy who was at one of his Bible studies, and he said what he first found. He says, "Wow, I stumbled across this notion. I heard a teaching about one letter that it meant something." And one of his, you might say, easiest to recognize is the word for son, S-O-N, like your offspring, is spelled in Hebrew Bet Nun, or in English, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And the letter Bet is a house, and the letter Nun is the life or something living. So the son is the life of the house. And so Frank Seekins saw that, and it's like, wow. And then he did this study of all the letters and came up with all these different ways to read a word. And, like, for example, the word fire is Aleph Sheen, or in English would be A-S-H, ash. Well, fire produces ash. But the Aleph basically is, like, strong, and the Sheen is teeth. So fire is strong teeth. It consumes everything into ash. So there you see this relationship between English and Hebrew and the what he calls Hebrew word pictures, the pictures that are in every letter. So Jeff Benner has done quite a bit of writing on this also. So and there's a number of other books out on the market written by some Jewish rabbis and just other people studying the language. There's one fellow that I make mention to on my chart. His name is Nigel Pennick, which wrote a book called Magical Alphabets. And he talks about various different things from Europe. And now as a Baptist and a Presbyterian, it's like, magical alphabets? Why that's occult. That's
right.
Sorcery. That's
exactly.
Witchcraft. It's like that's an anathema to the Lord and have nothing to do with it. But yet the chief of the magical alphabets was actually Hebrew. And it's like, why? Leave it alone. Step back from the Hebrew. It's like, now wait a second. Oxen were used to make idols, the golden calf. Does that mean calves are evil? It's what we do with it in our heart and what our attention is. You see, Aaron didn't make a golden calf and say, hey, let's worship the golden calf of Egypt. What he did was say, he took the gold, wrote Yahweh's name on it, and says, this is Yahweh. See, they still thought that they were regarding the image of the calf as Yahweh. They weren't making up a name of a different god and saying, let's worship the cow god. So the point is to take anything that was created and call it the creator, like, okay, the word Shemesh in Hebrew is servant. Well, that's also the name of the sun. So the sun is the servant that runs across the sky doing its job, doing its bidding. It's a good servant. Yahweh made the sun and said, this is what you're supposed to do, and the sun does it. We should be the same as servants like that. But the point is to turn the sun into a deity and worship the deity, or to use the image of the sun as a way to reference the Holy One of Israel, the Kadosh One of Israel. See, the word holy is actually the name of an Indian goddess. But the point is, how do we then clean up our language, clean up our behavior, and worship? The word worship in Hebrew is obed, where we get obedience So if you want to worship Yahweh, you have to be obedient to his word. So how do we clean up our behavior, our thoughts, our heart, our actions, our language, to be obedient to his prescribed path of worship and even recognizing him and then spreading his reputation and his fame? See, the word Shem, which is name, also in Hebrew means reputation, renown, fame, that which you're known for. And if we misrepresent him according to his prescribed path, we've essentially created a different Elohim, a different deity, a different
and
God.
So that's, we had just 1 minute left, Eric, but that's kind of what we see in most of religion today, is that we've created our own Elohim, haven't we?
Well, as soon as we tweak one thing off of what he prescribed, we've created a different one. So if he says, regard me, the seventh day is my signature, and you go, it could be any 7 days. Ah, he didn't say that. You've created a different Elohim. If he said, this is my name, and said, we're not going to mention his name, we're going to call him something else, you've created a different Elohim. Even if he says, these are my festivals, these are my seven festivals which I invented, I created, I designed, I gave to you, my people, and we go, thanks, but we're going to make new ones.
Well, we're going to have you call in at 503-316-1220. This is excellent, getting back to the original words to really understand the scripture.
Now, this is a recorded program, so we're not going to be live, but if you have questions about this, we want you to be able to call in, and we'll get you in touch with Eric, or Jamie and I will be able to answer your questions. You can always email us, don@thejctown.com. or jamie@thejctown.com. And we don't want you to forget t2tn.com. This will be up on that website as well. Make sure and tell your friends and family about this program and about this radio network. We're a Hebrew nation in formation. We'll be right back.
This can't get radio like this anywhere else.
Do you know why KPJC listeners are some of the most blessed Bible students in the whole universe? We have the chance to be taught by some of the best spirit-filled Bible teachers anywhere. Each one of these Torah experts are passionate for the truth, has a unique message for today's awakening believer. And their messages are available right here at the KPJC T2TN Resource Center. Now we can prove the truth of the Bible from archaeology. We have the Exodus case that scientifically proves the Red Sea crossing, Sodom and Gomorrah, and more. Or there's the Mountain of God, the real Mount Sinai, by Penny Caldwell. Todd Bennett's Walk in the Light series explains in detail about the Hebraic walk of a believer with his books, Restoration, Names, Law and Grace, Sabbath, and many more. The four-book series of Stephen M. Collins that proves that most peoples in the world originate from ancient Israel. The KPJC T2TN Resource Center. For more information, call me at 503-316-1220. And don't forget to ask about the free gift on every purchase. That's 503-316-1220.
If you're listening to this station, then what you're listening to is a shovel. That's right, a shovel. Proverbs 25 says it's the glory of Yahweh to conceal a thing, but the honor of kings to search them out. And in Matthew 13, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hid in a field. What we're giving you is a tool to discover vast treasure and great wealth in Scripture. Don't rob your family or leave your friends behind in poverty. Tell them about KPJC, heard streaming on the internet from any place in the world at thejctown.com. It's radio you can't get anywhere. Anyplace else.
And we're back with you with 1220 KPJC, and we're broadcasting on the JCTown.com. Also, we have DTTN.com that you can listen to, and we are on Geo Media Network all over the world on satellite.
And if you go to T2TN or the JCTown.com, that's live and that's streaming. That means that if you have internet, you can get on and you can listen to the best in Hebraic program teachers, get the real whole story of the Bible that we might have been cheated out of just a little bit, according to Jeremiah 16:19 anyway.
What's really nice about that website is you go there, you can actually listen to some of the best teachers that are in the Hebraic movement in the United States and around the world. Click on them, listen to them, then you can go to their websites, get all this information in one place. It really saves you a lot of time. Well, this morning we have with us Eric Bissell in the studios, who's done a lot of work with studying out on his own. I'm sure a lot of people would say, well, Eric, where did you get your education? Well, he's got it through researching and praying about it. And tell us, how did you get all this information? I mean, it's like you've been to university or something, University of Yahweh, maybe.
Exactly.
Well, let me answer the question with a perspective first. My nephew went to a Christian college for a 4-year education. I believe it was in Minnesota. And he said they're going to. The tuition was worth $120,000. This is a serious place of study, right?
Wow.
They said we're going to regard and study and investigate every book of the Bible, except three. Want to take a guess which three they were not going to look at?
Genesis, Exodus.
No. Genesis and Exodus are both history. I mean, that's the creation of the world and the Egyptian thing.
And those are Song of Solomon.
Nah. Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy. It's the Torah.
The Levitical ones.
It's the foundation of the entire word of
Of the middle book, Leviticus.
Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy is all about the Torah. You see, Genesis and Exodus being the history of how they came to receiving the Torah. But every other book in the Scriptures goes back to referencing what's written in Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy.
How in the world can you throw out any part of the Bible? It's just amazing.
Well, because it just doesn't matter. It was nailed to the cross and buried, done away with. It's no more, according to certain traditional doctrines. But the point of the question is, what does Yahweh say about his word? He said it will endure forever and never be done away with. In fact, Yeshua is on record as saying, until heaven and earth pass away, hey, look, they're still here. Until heaven and earth pass away, not one. And then there's these strange words, jot and tittle, will be erased or eliminated from the law, the Torah, until all be fulfilled. Well, if heaven and earth are still here, nothing is completely fulfilled yet, or maybe some things have been somewhat fulfilled. But so the question is, what did he mean by that? Well, that gets into a whole other session, which is not the topic of our conversation. But what we're talking about is, what did who mean by what? And you could say, well, what did Yahweh mean when he said, this is an eternal covenant which will last forever or until the end of the ages when the end of the earth is accomplished. And they say, well, are the things that he wrote in Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy still active? Or is it like what we've been told from the doctrines that have been handed down from our forefathers that they were done away with? Now, if they were indeed done away with, then the study of Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy is a waste of time. Ancient history, maybe, curiosity at best. But if they were not done away with, and if they are the critical essence, the foundation stone, well, wait a minute, isn't Jesus the foundation stone? Well, he's the chief cornerstone. But what is he? Oh, that's right. He's the Torah incarnate, isn't he? The Word incarnate?
Yeah.
Now, if
that's
so, if he's the Torah incarnate, then how do we chop off his legs and by getting rid of Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy?
That's a good point.
The point is, do we rip his heart out and say, well, no, but he's the chief cornerstone only. He's eliminated the heart essence of everything he represents and is the embodiment of. The point is, if Yahweh himself, the giver of the word, the inventor and determinator and expressor of the words of Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy, if he didn't do away with them, then maybe we should go back and regard them. And so I've simply been reading the Torah. What I've noticed is that the Tanakh, which an acronym?
Acronym.
Tanakh stands for Torah, Ta, Nevi'im, prophets, and Keterim, which is writing. So Tanakh is simply what we call the Old Testament, but it's the Torah, which is the instructions, the prophets, which are telling the people of Israel, you better regard the instructions, or the writings, like of David and Solomon, which say, hey, you know, those instructions were so great, let's make up a bunch of poetry and encourage one another to keep them because of how beautiful they are. So it all goes back to the Torah. As I said, Genesis and Exodus are pretty much a historical foundation. In the center of the entire scriptures is Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy actually is a retelling. Deut means two, so it's a retelling of what's in Leviticus and Numbers. So Deuteronomy is kind of an encapsulation of the whole Torah. So it's like, you know, we tell people as Christological perspective, start in the book of John. But I've heard the book of John, the Gospel of St. John, is esoteric. And it's like, what does that mean? Mystical. What does that mean? You know, we, from a certain Protestant perspective, say, well, things are mystical. That's almost creepy. That's almost New Agey kind of a cult. And again, stay away from that if you know what's good for you, if you want to be evangelical. But on the other hand, it's like, why do we tell people to start with the book of John then? It's rather esoteric, means you have to have inside secret knowledge, perspective, connections in order to even know what he's talking about. Why should we tell people to start with the Gospel of John? I think if we told people to start with, hey, why not the beginning, Genesis, and if you want to jump around, jump to Deuteronomy, because it's an encapsulation, a rehashing, a reiteration. Moses, right before he died, gathered the people together and said, okay, remember what happened? Here we go. Let me tell you from the beginning, and this is where we are today. Now, if you want to know where we are today, you might want to read Deuteronomy chapter 30. And Moshe is telling the people, it's a future projection. He's not talking exactly to the people standing there in his midst, though he is talking to them. He's actually talking to us. And he says, when all these things have come upon you, the blessing and the curse that I've warned you about, that Yahweh has warned you about, at the end of days, way into the future, and because you've forsaken his word and you've been scattered across the face of the earth, when you come back to listen and regard and do and observe to keep all the commandments and the words I've told you today, then Yahweh will restore to you the blessings of the covenant he promised your forefathers, and he will gather you from all around the earth, even to the far side of the heavens, wherever he has scattered you, and bring you back to this land and give you the blessing that it was his delight to give your forefathers. Wow. Has that happened yet?
No.
Hey, maybe we're there now.
We're approaching it. So from what you're saying, all these other books, the first four, and then everything else is to build or to explain them to a greater degree in the Tanakh of the Old Testament. Then if you take that to the Renewed Covenant, you're just getting a further explanation from the original. So if you don't know the original, you're just not really understanding the explanation in the New Covenant, because it would be, you know, Yeshua came to show us that he was the living Torah, and he walked it and showed it and explained it and really brought it to a higher authority, if you will, because here's a man that had the authority from God himself, according to Scripture, and John the Baptist. He was the one that could tell us how to walk that walk of Torah.
He was the Messiah, yeah.
How would you define the word commentary? There's a number of, I remember when I was a kid, there was Matthew Henry's commentary on the Scriptures.
Right.
So as a type of book, a study book, how would you describe the word commentary?
Well, it would be someone that is giving you greater understanding of what these words say by what he knows, because he's understood history.
Well, I would call it opinion. Commentary is opinion, isn't it? It certainly doesn't carry the same weight as Scripture.
No, it's what he has.
Although I wouldn't call necessarily.
Well, he's commentary. He's getting all kinds of common information and putting it into this particular subject. He's giving you a lot more, a bigger picture, if you will.
Okay, so now here's something for the listeners to ponder. I've heard this said, and I don't want to stir up any trouble, but I've heard it said that the New Testament is a commentary about the Torah.
Wow.
A commentary. In other words, here, let me explain to you how it's done. Now, we were told in the Torah that if anybody adds to or takes away from, now this sounds like the book of Revelation, the last verse, I think, says, if anybody adds to or takes away from the words of this book, then the curses of this book will be placed upon him. However, in the Torah it says, don't let anybody add to or take away from, and actually there's a one particular verse that says Moshe was the one trustworthy person of the entire group of the people of Israel, and Yahweh trusted him because he did not embellish or diminish the words that Yahweh gave him, but he gave them right there, just like Yahweh said. And so Yahweh himself found Moshe to be trustworthy. Now, would Yeshua add to or take away from the words? Would he change anything? Would he embellish anything that Yahweh had said without sin?
Wow.
He couldn't. So he didn't give opinionated commentary, but he gave explanatory commentary. But what about the disciples? Did they embellish? Did they add to? Did they modify? Did change? Would Paul himself, who said, follow me as I follow Yeshua, and he himself was an orthodox, Torah-observant Jewish rabbi type, as was Yeshua, would he have modified, changed, or bifurcated anything the Torah had to say?
No, absolutely not.
But we're told this is getting a whole other subject.
He abolished the law, right.
He abolished the law and started a new religion. Did he?
No.
Would he have? If Yeshua had abolished the law and started a new religion, would he not have been guilty of breaking the Torah? of sin, but then he couldn't be the Messiah if he sinned, if he broke the Torah. So he had to keep the Torah. Well, but he fulfilled the law. So I like to mention to people this picture. Imagine you come across a few little kids playing basketball, and they don't know how to hold the ball right. They don't know how to throw it right, and the ball's going all over the place, never even hitting the backboard.
It's a good time to talk about it because Portland just won yesterday. So
there you go. So suppose you walk up and say, hey, kids, can I show you how it's done? If you just don't mind for a moment, here. You grab the ball like this, you hold it like this, you stand like this, you bend your knee like this, and your arms like this, and you look the basket like this, and you go, whoo, boom, the ball goes in the basket, and you go, see, that's how you do it. And then the kids all look at you, and they go, well, I guess we're done here. We can all go home now. The goal has been fulfilled. It's like, wait a minute. You're supposed to be playing the game. The goal wasn't just to throw the basket in the net, though that's kind of a goal. The goal is for you guys to be playing the game. I just showed you how to do it successfully.
There you go. That's a great
analogy.
That's
what Yeshua came to do.
That's a great analogy. Really good. Yeah, and that's really, I can even go on. If you throw the ball and you miss it, well, you readjust. You adjust it so you can get it. You keep doing it until you finally get that swish over and over again, like, foul shots. If you work at it, get that Brandon Roy swish.
There you go. Well, anyway, to go back to the Hebrew language, what I found by reading the books we were told to pay no attention to the books behind the curtain, Numbers, Deuteronomy, that's Wizard of Oz stuff. Anyway, The point is...
we got the illusion. We're of that age group. We can do that. So,
anyway, you go back to the... remember, what was behind the curtain? Let's see. Moshe was given a tabernacle to build. Yahweh said to him, see to it that you make everything according to this pattern. Do not vary a bit. Well, within the tabernacle. Now, the word tabernacle in English, we think of as that place that Moses made out in the desert in the books of Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy.
Right, talks about tabernacle it. In the wilderness.
Tabernacle in the wilderness.
I've been there, by the way.
And basically, it was a big white fence, about 50 feet by 150 feet, I believe. And then there was a four-colored embroidered gate on one side to get in. And then right inside was an altar of sacrifice where they brought their slaughter offerings. And then there was a laver, a place of water for cleansing. And then there was a what's called the Kadosh place, the set-apart place. In English Bibles, it'll be called a holy place. That's another matter about use of words and language and what's the best description. But hey, well, just for sake of people's reference of reading their KJV Bibles and all, it's called the holy place. And inside that was a menorah, a candlestick, a table of showbread. Showbread is a type of bread, but yet the word is actually panim, where we get pan is in some languages the word for bread. Panim also means faces, just for what it's worth. And then there's an altar of incense, and then there was a veil, a curtain. And on the other side of the curtain was the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
So behind the curtain was the Ark of the Covenant, which no one was allowed to even look at or touch or see or anything except for only the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, once a year on the Day of Atonement. He was to go in there and splatter blood of the sacrifice.
Right.
But the point is, what was behind the curtain? It was called the Kadosh Kodeshim. It was also called the Debir, which means the word, and it was the untainted, the unaffected by humanity, the pure expression of truth and righteousness right out of the mouth of the Creator himself. That is what's Kadosh Kodeshim. That's what's really behind the curtain. So I was kind of joking around. I say, the books that are behind the curtain seem to be Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy, and hey, wouldn't you know, those are the expression of the Creator himself too. Interestingly enough, you could say, now, come on. Now, why wouldn't the church regard these things? Whose fault is it? Is it the devil's fault? Is it some monkey business shenanigans from various priests and authorities? No, it's Yahweh's curse. Yahweh said to Israel, I'm going to give you the truth. I'm going to reveal myself to you. I'm going to show you my ways so that you can walk in them, and it will be your blessing, your peace, your health, your wealth, your esteem in the eyes of the nations around you. However, here's the blessing. If you keep them, I will abundantly bless you and prosper you. If you don't keep them, here's the curse. I'll give you what you want. I'll give you exactly what you want. I'll take it away from you. You won't know me, and I'll give you that you have nothing left except for all the various ways of the heathen nations around you, and they will dominate you and lord it over you, and you will be subject to them, and all the stuff that I had given to you, I will take away from you and give it to them. Only they don't know how to use it, so they won't use it right, but they can have it. That's okay. Your curse, which is what...
Eric, we're going to have to interrupt you just for a second. We want you, again, to write in, or if you call in, 503-316-1220, or if you write Don at the JC Town or Jamie at the JC Town, any questions you have, we'll get them to Eric if we can't answer.
Well, that's right. And that's what we're all about here at AM 1220 KPJC, is that we are trying to give you a revelation of what Yahweh intended for us in the beginning. This is Don Wyatt, General Manager of AM 1220 KPJC and co-host of Torah to the Nations. Recently, I felt that the Holy Spirit told me to prepare in the event that the on-air radio broadcasts could no longer continue and the station goes off the air. Why would this happen? I don't know, but I can tell you the attack from the enemy is intense in many areas, including financial. We are the only Bible-based, washed in the blood of Messiah, Torah teaching station in the world that offers a Hebraic perspective, new messages, unique programming, and time news that you need to hear 24 hours a day. Make sure that we have your contact information so that we can keep you informed by internet, phone, or by mail, no matter where you are in the world. Our God is bringing the Hebrew nation back together again. If you're supposed to volunteer, give your tithe or an offering, provide technical support, or have some other way of helping and haven't done it, please don't wait. We may only have a few days left. Help us keep in touch with you by calling 503-316-1220 or email Don at the JCTown.com.
And we're back with you for, I tell you what, the time is flying by, Eric. This is so exciting. We are hearing some of this stuff that we've heard from a different pattern or a different way, but it excites me because our goal here is to get to the common ground of the Word. Now, you and I can talk about that because I know that's but the common ground is understanding the words from Elohim in the basic understanding. That's common ground. Get back there. I mean, you know, we have Hebrew, we have Greek, we have Latin, we have all these different languages, English and all the other languages we've translated because of all the Babel. I mean, since the Tower of Babel, it's been scattered. We need to get back to His words, His letters, His way, and then we won't have to have all this commentary or patterns. I think that's what you're trying to show us, is that if we can get to the closer we get, the more we see the reality of how His truth is right there from the beginning in His words.
You know, let me just say this, Eric, and I'd like you to answer this in the best way that you can. Regularly, I have people say, yeah, but I speak English, and my Bible's written in English. How do you respond to somebody like that? I know how I do, but how do you?
Well, a very interesting verse I noticed the other day, actually two verses, and I won't go into the details of locating where they are and going into that, but Yahweh said to His people, He says, the words that I have placed in your mouth will not be removed from your mouth or the mouth of your children or the mouth of your children's children forever. It's like, wait a minute, what words did He place in our mouth? What words did He place in our mouth, do you think, that haven't been removed many generations down the line? See, now you read this verse in English and you go, okay, I think I understand what the words mean.
Yeah.
But what words did He place in our mouth?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, it couldn't have been the Torah, because the Torah has been removed from our mouth. It was nailed to the cross and done away with, and we have a new covenant which disregards it. So it couldn't have been that, because that's not being fulfilled. Maybe now where we're talking about looking back. But here's the trick. You'll never see it in English. But I saw the word was spelled Shin Mem Tav Yod, and then when it's yours, you'd have a cough at the end, and it's Semitic. And I looked it up in the dictionary, and I thought, well, what's Semitic? Well, that's the sons of Shem. You got Shem, Ham, and Japheth that came out of the Noah's sons that came out of the ark, and say, okay, well, the sons of Shem are the Semitic people. And it's like, I looked up the word for Semitic, and in the dictionary says it's the oldest structured language that we know of on the face of the earth, and it's built on a basis of three consonants with some vowels thrown in, and you've got verb tenses of completed and incompleted action, and out of the Semitic root has come Hebrew, Phoenician, Greek, Latin, modern European and American languages. And so here's the thing. Could that be Yahweh's word? See, the other way to read the word Semitic is Shin Mem is the word for there. It's also the word for name and occupation. It's that which is established as a given. And then the letter Tav means, you could say it's past tense, could be future tense, but in this case it's past tense, I have placed there. And Yod there means I have done this. I have placed there in you or to you, given to you, is the Kaf at the end. Kaf at the end of a word means yours. So Yahweh, could it be, this little mystery of a riddle in the languages, that the word Semitic is Yahweh's placing his Shem, his name, his reputation, his renown in our mouths, we who speak, what's based on the alphabetic structured languages of the Semitics, which is all the Greek and the Latin and the modern English, Spanish, French, German, Russian, and even Arabic has the same common roots. And you go, well, yeah, but what is Yahweh's fame, reputation, name, renown, which is known as his Shem? Well, it's interesting enough. What I found is that it's keyed to this thing called the tabernacle. What's tabernacle in English? Tabernacle in English is similar to the word tavern because the B and the V, like in Spanish and in Hebrew, is the same letter, where we get the word tavern, which is the local hangout for in the neighborhood. In Greek, it's taverno. But in Hebrew, it's mishkan. Well, mem is a place when it's a prefix. Shekin, shak, a shack. Shek is like a sukkah, shin kaf, the same letters. The sukkah is like the festival of Sukkot in the seventh month, starting the 15th day for a week, which is where you hang out together. Yahweh's tabernacling, sukkah-ing with us is Yeshua incarnate, hanging out with us for a while. And then you say the shekin, shekin is the act of tabernacling, and Shekinah, some people know about Shekinah. I heard one person say, well, that's the name, the female name of the Holy Spirit is Shekinah. And it's like, well, Shekinah is the revealing of the Shekin, which is my habitating with you in the shack, which is the Shin Kaf, which is actually like a thicket or a covering or a temporary dwelling. Our bodies, our flesh bodies on the face of this earth, are simply temporary dwellings. So for the Ruach HaKodesh, the spirit of Elohim, to inhabit our bodies as his temple, as his sukkah, you know, you see these picture types is a picture of Yeshua temporarily inhabiting, walking the face of the earth with us. But Shekinah then simply means, I have chosen to hang out with you guys here. And the Mishkan then, which is the tabernacle, is the place where he chooses to hang out. So, which is this tabernacle in the wilderness. But he says, you guys can't just barge in here with your dirty shoes.
That's holy of holies.
You got to be cleaned up. Take your shoes off. In fact, you can't come in because you've been in contact with dead things.
Exactly.
So before you can walk into the Mishkan, he had the ashes of the red heifer, which is, you know, they make soap out of, you know, lye. Anyway, you had to be cleansed by the ashes of the red heifer before you can come into his place of dwelling. It's in the place of the ashes of the red heifer, we're right outside the tabernacle. Yeshua was crucified right outside the gates of Jerusalem, and it's a pictorial thematic type that before we can just barge into the kingdom of heaven, we need to be decontaminated. Now, that doesn't mean you need to clean up your life and do everything right before you can come in, because you don't. Until you get in, you don't have no idea what's going on in there. You don't know the ways of in there from out here. But from out here, you can say, like the Beatitude, the first Beatitude, which says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. If you notice in the darkness your poverty, your corruption, your hopelessness, and say, I recognize a poverty in myself, and then you're offered the big white fence glowing in the darkness saying, that's the kingdom of light and life. Read Deuteronomy 30. It talks about this. Moshe said, you were offered light and life as a blessing, and you were offered death and darkness as a curse. Your pick, choose this day. If you choose to come into the kingdom, you need to be decontaminated, and then you can come in. But if you say, you know, I kind of like it out here. You know, the skull and crossbones thing. I like the covenant of death. Say, okay, fine. Then you don't feel your poverty, so you have no need or no compulsion to enter the kingdom. And so I hope you enjoy your time out there. That's fine. That's your choice. You're welcome to it. But if you come into the kingdom,
you got to get cleaned up.
Well, you have to be decontaminated first. But when you come into the kingdom, it's like, hold on right there. Now, see, right inside the door of the kingdom, the door of the tabernacle, was the altar of sacrifice. Now, what do you put on the altar? Well, they brought in a sacrifice, and they'd drain out the blood. They'd separate the life from the body. They'd separate the blood from the body. Then they'd separate the skin from the body. Then they'd separate the entrails and the dung, and then they'd chop up into the little piece. It's all a matter of separation. You see, the first festival, you might say, the first thing to recognize is Pesach, which is to say Passover, which is to say, are you Israel or are you not? If you want to be Israel, you come into the kingdom, and you have to be circumcised, you have to sojourn with the people, and you have to learn his ways. So you come to the kingdom, that's where they painted the blood on the door, the first Pesach that we have record of when they came out of Egypt at the Exodus. But then the very next day was the festival of unleavened bread. It's actually a feast where you have to eat unleavened bread and get rid of the leavening in your house for a week. So it's a picture of saying, as soon as you decide to come into the kingdom, you have to, there was a picture of the shedding of blood with circumcision and with painting the blood on the door, and to say in the shedding of the blood of Yeshua, so that because of the shedding of blood, it's like, okay, this is serious business, you can come in, but now you need to learn the ways, which is get rid of everything which doesn't belong here. You see, you can't do that from the outside. You can't even know about it on the outside. But as soon as you come in, you say, okay, these are the instructions. But then once you learn the instructions, he says, with the instructions comes the blessing and the curse. If you keep the instructions, you get blessed. If you don't keep them, you get cursed. See, this lines up with a pictographic type of the laver, which is, has to do with a period of gestation, which is water. The letter mem and nun is water and the fish that lives in the water. It's also a picture of a womb and one who is growing in the womb. Mem and nun, the letters M and N.
Eric, you know, with the people out there that are listening to all this, this is really a picture of how we become Israel. In order for us to come in and become part of Israel, which is what the nation of Israel we believe is being called out from all four corners of the earth, there's a pattern that we have to get back into, which is why people are waking up when they hear some of these speakers and talking about these things. Their heart gets electrified because they know there's something in here that's feeding them that they want to know more of because they're drawn to it so that they can be enter into the kingdom of God. It's a like these things that you're talking about, these patterns, they're all here. But if you're not inside the gate, if you haven't understood the Old Testament, for example, if you haven't experienced Pesach or Passover because your pastor says, oh, that's done away with, it's a Jewish thing, then you can't really see the picture that's in here. And so, you know, the devil's so set up the world to exclude these things that they can't get into the kingdom. So, you know, this is a kingdom that we're trying to get into, and not very many people are going to get into if they've been excluded by their religions, if you will.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that, and this may, you know, some listeners may shut this off at this point. You could say, well, okay, so you got the blood of Yeshua decontaminating us to come into the kingdom. You got the ashes of the red heifer decontaminating the people so they can come into the Mishkan. But what is keeping us from understanding these things? Because I'm talking about things that are in here, and you can say, well, yeah, but people out there in the audience are out there, and they don't necessarily hear. It's like, well, you know, interestingly enough, the letter Zion is the seventh letter. The eighth letter is the Het. The eighth letter of the Het is a fence, and the Zion is a weapon. It's also the seventh letter, which means this is a full stop. This is a guard at the gate. I found it to be so that the Shabbat, the keeping of the seventh-day Sabbath, is like that weapon of the guard of the gate, which is a picture of the red heifer sacrifice before you can come in, which is a picture of Yeshua on the cross before you can come in. And what I found is that if you don't keep the Shabbat, now, he said, don't work. You can go to church any day. You can study the Bible any day. You can fellowship any day. But if you work on the seventh day, you're not keeping the Shabbat, and you can't get in. You can study these words. You can look at them. You can do everything you want. But you will be compromising your own understanding because it seems to be a key to get into this fence. And when I'm talking about the Mem and Nun, that lines up with the third festival of Shavuot, which is a time of 50 days of counting. Now, I've heard Michael Rood, for example, talk about if you can't count to three, how can you count to seven or count to 50? And the point is, there are patterns, there are types, there are structures of Yahweh's pattern. When he told Moshe, make everything according to this pattern. Now, we can have personality conflicts, and we can have various different expressional differences, but the structure of the pattern that Yahweh gave simply is what it is. There's three spring feasts, there's four fall feasts. There's 7 days, there's the 50-year jubilee, and if we go, yeah, that's all Jewish stuff. Okay, we just missed it, and you can camp out in front of the gate, but you're certainly not getting in until you resign yourself to say, just like Pesach, shedding of blood, separate yourself from your inherited community, There's a verse in the scriptures that say that someday, one day in the future, 10 men will grab a hold of the tzitziot of one Jew and say, we have heard that God is with you, so take us to your leader. Well, you know, I was reading that verse, and that's not what it says. In my rendering of the translation, what it says is, we worship Elohim with you.
Oh, wow.
Now, wait a minute. They're not going to the Jew and saying, tell us how to worship Elohim. They're saying, we've already figured it out. We've already come back to the covenant. We've already looked into this stuff, and with a heart proactively seeking and searching to Shema, Shomer, let's go with you to worship the Elohim, the Mighty One of Israel, the Kadosh One of the Maker of heaven and earth, and because we walk in His ways.
I think that's such a great point because we're supposed to make the Jewish people jealous, you know, but that word doesn't really explain what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to love God with all our heart, mind, and soul. They love God with all their mind. They're the brothers that love the same God as we do. We got to come together in one way, and the only way I know that was possible is through Yeshua. Both of us have to come together in Him. It's not that they're totally crazy or wrong. Our the Christian world, we all have to come back to His truth, like what we're talking about, the Word, the original Word, the truth of God's Word, what it's really saying. I believe what you just said is true.
Real quick, we've got about a minute left here. You ever heard of Kona Coffee? Pretty good stuff. There's a place in Hawaii named Kona. Yahweh Himself said, I am El Kona. What does it mean? He's the big coffee guy? Hey, well, he said he put coffee on Moshe and showed him his kavod, his glory, because the word kaf is an open hand, which represents the Torah covering you like a tallit, by which you can see, if you cover your wrap yourself in it, you can see his kavod, his esteem. However, he also says Al-Kona, which is translated, I am powerfully jealous. But it's also the word zealous. So to say, well, the English word says we've got to make those Jews jealous. And it's like, wait a minute. If you're doing something and you come next to somebody who's doing the same thing and you're going, hey, man, there's a synergy there. It's like, hey, let's do this together. Is one zealous or jealous or is one good and one bad? It's like, no, it's like we're doing this together. Let's do this. Let's do what he said to do with a great heart of teamwork. But you see, there was 12 tribes, but Joseph had Ephraim and Manasseh and Yaakov said, these both will be mine. So it's technically 13 tribes if you look at it that way.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we are at the end of this hour already, and it's like a fire hose. You are going to have to go to t2tn.com, get on that subscription so you can download this in the morning and listen to it over and over again. Thanks for being with us again on Torah to the Nations.
And if you really enjoyed this, give us an email because, you know, we'd like to make Eric more available to you. He's got plenty of information. He could probably have a show, do something all the time. If you like him, let us know.
Okay. Back tomorrow.
Vayichunecha Yisa Adonai Panav Elecha Veyasem Lecha
Today's program has been brought to you in part by Tree of Life Outlet at Lincoln City Factory Stores.